Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. I have a absolutely fascinating draft topic. And we get people who bring me the most interesting stuff here this time of year in terms of the draft and their connection to it. Here to do it today is Spencer Peterson. He's been on the show before. Spencer, how are you doing?
Good, Ken. How are you doing?
Can't complain at all. Tell folks where they can find your work online, first of all. Where do you on Twitter or wherever you talk football with people?
So mostly on Twitter. You can find me at Spencer CP. That's S-P-E-N-S-E-R-C-P on Twitter.
Okay. Unusual. S-P-E-N-S-E-R instead of C-E-R. Okay. So the topic you have for today, I don't want to steal it from you here, but it's percentile rankings. As soon as an actuary, of course, hears the word percentile, he probably wants to do the topic. So you had me there. But percentile rankings for drafted players. You're basically are setting an expectation based on what, about 30 years of draft history or 20?
It's 20. So starting with the start of free agency, which we can set as a line of maybe the modern draft analytics timeframe, you know, the Jimmy Johnson chart coming to be, that sort of thing, running through 2012 when we'd have players with 10 years of data or 10 years of statistics under their belt to sort of evaluate.
Okay. And we've seen a lot, of course, of different systems use AV as a metric they judge career value for. You stuck with that?
Yeah. It provides a good way to sort of sift or separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak. It's a little bit of a clunky methodology at times, but for these purposes of looking through 50 or 60 players drafted at a position over a given period of time, it's a helpful way to compare players without having to do the full film breakdown or statistical analysis.
Right, there you go. And I understand that the AV system works off points per drive, offensively or defensively, differences from the league, and then it basically shares all those points among the players on offense and defense in a way that is kind of questionable. But the real question that we have with AV, my question about career AV versus draft position, is teams need to get basically all of that value from the draft pick or as much as possible on the first contract.
That's true. Yep. And we're looking at career AV here. Thought about that and knew you'd raise that point when we spoke, Ken. But the thinking of this was that it's a lot easier to look at the totality of the career and understand what that player, what the type of player we're talking about is versus individual. Some players may have really peaked in that first 4 years and then they fall off a cliff. And when we say, mm-hmm. You really want to draft a player that's like this, it just might not come across the same way or be as digestible.
Sure. And I'm of course not trying to bash the study because this is fascinating stuff. We're going to get into this and this is absolutely fascinating. Dwayne Starks might be the ideal player you want to draft, who has a ton of value on his first contract and then falls off a cliff. He was totally worth the number 10 overall draft pick for the Ravens. I still maintain there are people who say you don't really want that kind of a player. He produced for the Ravens and they got all that value out on the first contract. They didn't pay him a second contract. Was a great deal. But why don't we talk about the 2022 draft picks? Because that's what everybody wants to hear about.
Absolutely. And so, Ken, the idea here was everyone's super excited about this draft. A lot of national media pundits are saying it's the best draft in the league or top five. And as we look back at past drafts, fans like to talk about which picks were good, which picks were bad. Goal here is to sort of set an expectation up front of what we would expect from each of these picks. And really, the goal is for each pick to say, compared to what? So what is the baseline that we would evaluate each of these picks against? What do we expect them to become? What is the 50th percentile outcome at a given draft position? What is the 75th percentile? Anything above that 75th percentile, that's hitting a home run with the pick. Anything above 50th percentile, that's slightly above expectation, and maybe anything below 50th percentile is a dud or a bust or however you want to call it.
Yeah, you wouldn't want it. And did you find that they typically had a tail where the good outcomes, the ones over 50%, tend to have a very long tail of difference, and the ones that are under 50% tend to be more lumped around very low AV totals?
Yeah, exactly. And you see this more as you go deeper into the draft. So the early portion of the draft, you're going to have a much more linear distribution of from the low end to the high end. Mm-hmm. And part of that would come from AV is biased towards playtime. So a top pick.
They're automatically starters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Whereas your sixth rounders, seventh rounders, you have a lot of guys who don't even make the roster. And so you have a lot of blanks in the data set at that point or zeros mm-hmm. in AV. So for example, this isn't one of the guys we're going to talk about today, but Geno Stone. safety for the Ravens today, mm-hmm. is already at the 50th percentile career AV expectation for his spot as a DB drafted in the seventh round.
What's about one?
Two. But yeah, two. Give yeah. or take. And that's some of the lumpiness in how you assign AV. But yeah. there's about the bottom third probably never played a game in the NFL, if I look back at the data here.
That sounds about right. And I know seventh round picks, the Ravens have never really had a particularly successful one. They had Tyson, what was the guy's name? Defensive lineman.
Not Tyson Williams.
No, this guy played in about 2008 to 10 kind of era. And he was a seventh round pick. I think he might have even played in the Super Bowl. But anyway, he's one of their best seventh round picks along with Ralph Staten. So he's not a lot to choose from at that point.
Yeah. And just another player to mention very briefly, why this idea sort of percolated before I put together the numbers themselves. Last year in Baltimore, Matt Judon playing on the franchise tender, probably a wash in terms of value. You know, you overpay a little bit to keep a guy back for 1 year of, you know, mm-hmm. you get, keep him from going to free agency. But before that, you know, saw a lot of chatter on Twitter, online message boards about how Matt Judon didn't really become what we expected. And he was an okay pick, but the guy was a fifth round pick. That what you got out of Matt Judon is an absolute home run from a value.
Oh yeah. And so absolutely
some of the genesis of how this idea started coming together and wanting to really set that baseline of what can you reasonably expect from a player at a given position in the draft.
Yeah, this is absolutely a fantastic effort. I want to go through the individual players here.
Yep. Okay. And maybe I'll just set the stage really quickly of what the pick tranches we're talking about are. Mm-hmm. So in order to set the expectation, originally tried to do a regression model, and it gets really complicated with different positions, the way they get assigned AV. So it gets really messy. So I decided to go with something a little bit simpler where you take the pick that each player was drafted at, mm-hmm. go seven picks in either direction. And the goal there is to set a 15 pick band that's about half a round so that you can compare kind of like for like at a position, players drafted around each of the Raven picks, mm-hmm. What you'd expect for them. And that's to cut through some of the lumpiness of draft picks. Late first rounders, maybe more like an early second rounder than otherwise. But jumping into it here, Kyle Hamilton, the first pick we want to talk about, pick mm-hmm. number 14. So the band that we created was between the 7th and the 21st pick. Mm-hmm. Safeties drafted between 7 and 21 from 1993 to 2012. And that gives us a list of 12 safeties. The median of which being somewhere in between Mark Barron, who was drafted by Tampa Bay in 2012 in the first round at pick number 7, and Michael
Alabama.
Griffin. Yep. Michael Griffin, who Tennessee took out of Texas in 2007 with the 19th pick. So they had 58 career AV and 55 respectively.
Two Pro Bowls between them, 16 total starting seasons, presumably both those guys being first-round draft picks, and I don't remember actually, were installed as starters in their rookie year.
That or got significant play time, yep.
Yep. So, interesting. Okay, Barron and Griffin. Okay, so those names are not exceptionally well-known, but you know, they played in the NFL for a while, certainly, and they did some good things. Don't think that's the kind of value the Ravens are hoping to get from those players. So who represents the 75th percentile?
75th percentile is Malcolm Jenkins for New Orleans, who started for 12 seasons, or who's the primary starter for 12 seasons, three Pro Bowls, no All Pros, but was almost a 200 game starter there out of Ohio State, and would be a really good outcome if Hamilton could turn into Malcolm Jenkins and, you know, be a safety that locks down a starting position for 10 years at positive contribution.
So most of your guys, he actually is 13 years in the NFL, and I guess from your spreadsheet here, it looks like he retired at the end of 21. I don't know that for a fact. He's still not planning to play somewhere here, or that just goes through 21.
I think that just goes through 21 because there would be no games logged through 22.
But it might not be on there anyway on Pro Football Reference where there would be an active indicator there for, it's okay. Don't sweat it. So anyway, open-ended, very positive result if he would end up to be Malcolm Jenkins. Now, there's two things about this I would bring up as questions. The first is when you're dealing with a high first round pick, or even a mid first round pick, by taking a seven pick band, you may be in a position where on the upside, you're dealing with a lot of skewing where there's exceptional additional value. And if you're going the downside, it flattens out more. And I think you're safe anytime after about round one.
Yeah. And I thought about that. And I thought about truncating this where maybe at the top 10, I didn't go any mm-hmm. further. This set of players in particular, it's actually funny. There's almost a perfect mix of Roy Williams, who is the eighth pick, Mark Barron, who's the seventh pick, who are sort of positives versus 50th percentile. Then Dante Whitner and Michael Huff, who are the eighth and seventh pick respectively, who are negatives against the 50th percentile. So here your top players were actually Troy Polamalu, Hall of Famer, pick 16, Earl Thomas, probably a Hall of Famer, pick 14, and then Malcolm Jenkins, who we just spoke about, pick 14. So everyone is sort of hitting above their weight was actually drafted 14th pick or later.
Happened to work out that way. That doesn't necessarily express the value Absolutely. In terms of this week. And with Hamilton being, you know, such an obvious value pick, and the Ravens, you know, talking about him being the fifth or the sixth best player on their board, do you think the banding is proper for him? And I'm not saying you should change it, because your method is outstanding, and I want to really go through your method. But I'm wondering, should we even consider it a win if he ends up being Malcolm Jenkins? Or would that actually perhaps be a little bit less than what the Ravens are currently expecting out of Kyle Hamilton, given that they drafted him entirely for value, and he, you know, maybe the seventh pick was a more reasonable place to start the banding?
I would say that is a fair point. The only counter I would say is that I think every team, or most teams at least, say that they got the top guy on their board who should have been drafted 10 picks earlier. So, I like to think that's the case with Hamilton, but I think a lot of teams would say that the same thing for the guys they draft.
Sure. Okay. So that makes sense. Anyway, I don't want to stomp on the time you're spending explaining your method, because this is just great. So anyway, set a reasonable expectation for players. If the guy ends up being Barron or Griffin, I don't think the Ravens fans would consider it a win, considering that, you know, they went opposed to need, they got a BPA player, and they got a guy hopefully who's going to produce towards the top end of that. Let's move on to Tyler.
Absolutely. So Tyler Lindenbaum, center, drafted at the pick 25. So that gives us a band from pick 18 through pick 32. So basically the back half of the first round. This sample of players yielded seven players, and there's an incredibly high floor, at least in this data set, on centers drafted in the first round. So the absolute worst guy drafted as a center in the first round was Chris Spencer to Seattle out of Mississippi. Almost started 100 games in his career, was a six-year starter, primary starter. That's the absolute floor, which in other position groups, you do not see that kind of production or that kind of scoring for the worst guy in the sample.
Right. So traditional draft logic would say get people who impact the passing game, and a center is pretty far from impacting the passing game directly. So you if you're drafting a guy like that, you're probably selecting above positional value within the draft. And so you're going to tend to get a better player. Now, this is really unusual, but in recent years, the last decade of picks, which I've looked at specifically for centers, there've been a lot of failures. There've been some big successes too, but it's very highly correlated to arm length. So anyway, please tell us about the 50th and 75th percentile here.
Yeah, absolutely. So the 50th percentile is Jeff Hardings, who Detroit drafted out of Penn State. He's a 11-year primary starter, two Pro Bowls, All-Pro, played from 96 to 2006. That would seem like a good outcome here. But again, the reasonable expectation or what's shooting par for center is a really high bar. Yeah. And then your 75th percentile, Marquise Pouncey. I think he's getting a lot of credit for the number of Pro Bowls, because the two players that flank him, actually, I would consider to be better players.
Yeah, I agree.
So Alex Mack comes in as the number one player in this group, who was a longtime starter with Cleveland. And then Nick Mangold comes in right between Marquise Pouncey and Jeff Hardings. But they're all pretty concentrated, actually, in a relatively narrow band of AV. So Jeff Hardings, who we talked about as the 50th percentile guy, is at a 70. Nick Mangold at 73. Marquise Pouncey at 78. Alex Mack at 86. So not a huge differentiation, and a lot of really good players there.
Yeah, it's incredible that the study period actually has a much more concentrated group of outstanding players at center in the band that you chose relative to the last decade, where it's been very hit or miss. Garrett Bradbury just getting declined his fifth year option by the Vikings, who's had a lot of problems. And who's the other guy, short arm guy, Billy Price for Cincinnati, who never really settled in at center, a rare, really bad first round bust. But then there's also three Pro Bowlers in the group, and I'm forgetting the names right now, but
I think Travis Frederick fits in the group.
Travis Frederick is in the group, yes. He's of guys drafted at first round at center in the last decade or so. Cam Irving also originally was drafted as a center, although he's played all over the line, never really got a position. He wasn't very good either, so.
It was the guy in New Orleans as well, I think, right? Who a lot of Ravens fans wanted to draft. And his name is escaping me a couple years ago.
Yeah, I put out a tweet about this and then I forgot some of the information. But you're right. There's three guys there and includes six guys who primarily played center, eight guys in total who were drafted originally to play center and that ended up with various degrees of success. But three were Pro Bowlers.
Yeah, and I think the key takeaway here is that the floor or the bar that you're evaluating a pick at as a center in the first round is incredibly high. So Linderbaum better be a near decade long starter, make some Pro Bowls, or else this pick is going to look very suspect given kind of what's the reasonable expectation at this position.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And, you know, in terms of, I think a lot of people have said that already, but I think one thing people don't really talk about is this being a high floor pick. I mean, I think in point of fact, looking at his traits and his length and whatnot, he's an extremely high variance player. If it works out for him, if he can get by, if he can work with his lack of length, he's going to be a terrific NFL player. And it'll be interesting because I think he's pretty much a boom or bust. But your methodology would say the floor is very high and that, you know, this is an easy double, you know, or maybe even an easy triple given the players who've been drafted there before.
Yeah, I think it sort of depends how you look at it. You know, someone just being drafted in this range does not inherently make them a better player. But assuming the Ravens have done the right, you know, diligence and know the guy they're taking, you should feel somewhat comfortable that we're at least getting a good starter out of this.
Right. All right. Outstanding. So I feel better about Linderbaum already. Let's keep going. So the next pick, a really interesting one.
So David Ojabo, our second round pick, announces a linebacker. So he's compared to the group of linebackers that were drafted within this band of picks. So you're going to get some inside guys, some outside guys. This is one of the positions that the data for draft position gets a little wonky because you're going to have pass rushers, then you're going to have some inside guys. But in total, there were 47 players drafted within this range of the draft who were announced as linebackers. The 24th pick, who would be our 50th percentile, is Koa Misi, who was drafted by Miami. He was a starter for 6 years. Played 84 games, started 72. Reasonably good player, but comes in with an AV of 30. I'll pause there for a second.
Well, we got Tommy Polly right behind him, who yep. A lot of people know from his time with the Ravens and his time at, I think he went to Polly here in Baltimore too. So I know he's a Baltimore guy. Maybe I had that wrong. But anyway, Tommy Polly, 5 year starter in the league. And then he came to Baltimore to start for a year. There's a lot of inside linebackers on this list is one thing I'm noticing and fewer outside linebackers. It seems like, I mean, I'm seeing Ray Maoluga is on the list and players like that. Daryl Smith is on the list. Relatively few total Pro Bowls played by this group, which is a little surprising, but I guess that would raise two questions to me. One is, are we reasonable in our expectations of Ojabo? And I know everybody thinks of him as a top 10 talent who just dropped because of the injury, and a year from now everything's going to be fine. But the fact of the matter is, he's the 45th pick. That's how he was valued by the Ravens. The expectation bar should actually be significantly lower for Ojabo that he needs to hurdle to be a good pick. And everybody wants Ojabo to come back this year, get his developmental year in, get some sacks in while we're doing it, and then have three outstanding years of production, which force him into the eventual Ravens Ring of Honor. Okay, so that's the goal. But to be reasonable about expectations for Ojabo, second round picks drafted around number 45 at linebacker have not been particularly spectacular.
No, and one interesting thing you mentioned that you're seeing a lot of inside linebackers here. I tried to mess around with the data to see if there was something I could do, maybe combining defensive ends and linebackers or other things to get what's maybe a better comparable set. But most of the defensive ends I was finding were more 3-4 defensive end types. And I think that might be a quirk in the data, but rather the way players are drafted, that you don't get a lot of pure edge pass rushers.
So more like a 5-tech, you're saying a 3-4 DE.
Yeah.
Or okay, yeah.
That were announced as defensive ends at draft time. But that I think there might be a dearth of pure, you know, pass rush, big sack producer guys that are taken in the front end of the second round to really fill out that comparable set, because those guys are either drafted in the first round or they have sufficient deficiencies that or significant deficiencies that push them back later potentially.
Okay, well, you know what? I think it wouldn't even matter if this were wide receiver. And the reason is you're looking at value. And so you're seeing here, these players drafted at number 45 have this approximate value over time. Let's see if we can get that. And somebody else can judge on the back end whether Ajabo was as important to the Baltimore Ravens as X receiver drafted at number 45 was to the Cincinnati Bengals whenever they drafted him. I think that, you know, that discussion could be made, but the methodology is just excellent here. I love what you've done here in terms of the percentile rankings. Let's keep going here.
Absolutely. So next player was Travis Jones, the third round pick. There were 28 defensive tackles taken within that 15 pick band. The median player is somewhere between Tank Tyler, who was the 14th best in this group, produced 11 AV by playing 43 games. And he went to Kansas City. The other player we have here is Kenny Peterson, who's the 15th best, also with 11 AV, played 76 games, starting 15 with Green Bay. So both of those players are one-year primary starters who played, you know, in the double mid-double digits worth of games total for their respective teams.
Okay, I'm wondering if there's something about defensive tackle which is making it harder for people to get starter credit. Maybe it's based on, I don't know how they do it. In fact, they probably do it just by games. Actual games started, they would do it by. Okay, so there may be issues that it's more difficult to get on the field, but that would probably be a 5-tech or something where you're forced into the nickel to start the game, literally on the first play of the game.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure I know how to evaluate all of the starter numbers on this list would be my question.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Kenny Peterson there with 15 games started in his career and Tank Tyler with 19. So mm-hmm. I don't think there's any way that they could have been more than a primary starter for a single season. But to your point, they could have been rotational players, heavy rotational players that played multiple seasons. But the respective careers are only, in the case of Tank Tyler, 3 years.
3 years, yeah.
Kenny Peterson, 6 years.
Yeah, Tyler was a player. I think he was very highly regarded when he came out. That's my recollection. He's the one who played for the Bears. No, well, you have Kansas City, but I thought I remembered him playing with the Bears.
I think you're thinking of there's another Tank.
Okay, Tank Williams or something.
Tank something. Yeah, there's another Tank that famously played for the Bears.
Okay,
but I think what you see here with the third round pick numbers, putting aside for a second that run stuffing defensive tackles can sometimes have trouble accumulating AV the way mm-hmm. it parses out credit for the points per drive success of the team, because they're not accumulating very many statistics by which to credit them. So a Marcus Peters, who has a lot of interceptions, for example, gets a lot of AV credited to him as a cornerback, whereas you don't necessarily get that credit for a run stuffing defensive tackle in the methodology of AV. But that really shouldn't affect our comparison here, because we're comparing like to like with defensive tackles.
Okay.
Kind of going up to the top end of the comparative set here, our 75th percentile player is Terrence Knighton, who Jacksonville drafted out of Temple, had a seven-year career, six of those as the primary starter, played 108 games, started 96, no Pro Bowls, no All Pros, but you know seems to be a solid player, solid result.
Okay, so a couple things about this group. One is there's absolutely zero All Pros in the group, even though Jarrell Casey, who made 5 Pro Bowls, is the number one guy on the list. And the only other guy who has even a Pro Bowl appearance is Randy Starks, the number 2 guy with 2. After that, your total starting years are not much. This is very different from the center group we looked at with Linderbaum. I think this is another pick where I would hope Travis Jones is more like the 55th player, and his banding as a value pick is really hopefully the Ravens will do better than the 50th percentile of this group. I'll just say that that obviously shooting at hitting at the 50th percentile, I'm not even sure hitting at the 75th percentile would be all that exciting, but hitting the 50th percentile definitely would not be in this group.
Yeah. And I mean, that's part of the point of this exercise, right? Is that I would say the same thing as you, that mm-hmm. if you told me he was going to be Terrence Knighton, I wouldn't be particularly thrilled. But what can I reasonably expect? Even if you told me that he was going to be Randy Starks, I don't know off first blush that I would be over the moon about that. But when you look at the actual historical draft data where Randy Starks was the second best player out of this group, played, you know, had about an 11-year career out of Maryland, you should be ecstatic about that, actually, if that's what Travis Jones ends up being.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that. There's a lot of guys here who played a lot of football games in the 75th percentile and high. So that's one positive thing. You know, the Ravens, the way they use their players rotationally, they're never gonna rack up a ton of AV. But we won't get into that. I don't want to get too deep into the AV methodology, but I think that it just takes points per drive on offense and defense and divides that out among the players. I don't know that it gets into statistics as much as it gets into Pro Bowls and All Pros. And a rotational defensive tackle is never going to be All Pro or Pro Bowl. So you it's always the guys like Aaron Donald who play a distinctly higher percentage of the snaps. Even Haloti Ngata in the Ravens rotational system, very difficult time ever getting to the Pro Bowl. I think he finally might have, but it took him a long time to finally get one.
Yeah, absolutely. And then in this band, you start to see a couple, there's not a ton, but you start to see at the bottom end of the range, lots of zero accumulations.
Yeah.
In terms of no games played. And I don't want to backtrack too much or jump around across the tabs here, but one thing we didn't mention on the Ajabo tab, the Ajabo comparison, is the very last player in that ranking is a familiar name, Sergio Kindle.
Ooh.
zero AV. But in some ways that, again, I don't want to backtrack too much here. There is sort of a bimodal expectation of potential for Ajabo as a pick that I don't know that the 50th percentile is the right way to think about it, because I think he's a little bit of a home run swing given the injury. Mm-hmm. We think we're getting the 10th best player or whatever you might think he is at a much later pick because of the injury risk. So in the back of my mind, it's either he's a zero or he should be at the very top end of that range.
Right there, that tells me that the Ajabo pick is probably better than I've been giving it credit for. I'm upset that he's missing a year, but the fact that he's a home run swing when you have a bunch of guys at the bottom end who really don't give you any value, particularly once you take out the replacement level. You know, you have a chance to get a guy who can give you, 30 to 70 AV, not during his rookie contract, but 30 to 70 AV over the course of his career, maybe even more than that, if it really works out.
Yep.
All right. Outstanding. Let's keep going.
So next we have Fa Lele. I hope I'm saying that correctly, in the very beginning of the fourth round. And so offensive tackles in that very early fourth round spot, we have 22 of them. We have 22 of them, and the median expectation is somewhere between Ray Willis, who Seattle drafted in 2005 out of Florida State, played 44 games for them starting 26, and then Nat Dorsey, who Minnesota drafted in 2004 out of Georgia Tech, played 40 games starting 9. So both were primary starters for a single season, and then no Pro Bowls, no All Pros between those.
Okay, so just looking over the palette of choices at tackle, offensive tackle, highly valued draft position, and it seems to me you really are taking lottery tickets when you take developmental tackles at this point. Even some of the players who are on the list, the number 7 overall guy is one of the worst performing PFF offensive tackles of all time, and that's Bobby Massey.
Yeah, and so that's the difference between PFF and the AV methodology, because AV methodology is going to give a lot of credit for playtime, for showing up. You start the game. Yep.
It's 100%. So just the AV methodology, it's 100% related to playing time, Pro Bowls, and All Pros on the offensive line. So they They look at offensive points per drive. They automatically give 45% to the offensive line. And then they only adjust how those points are given out among the five starting or the five linemen, all the linemen, based on Pro Bowls and All Pros.
Which, without getting too down in the weeds of or nitpicking the AV methodology too much or being too harsh on it, because it is very good for our purposes today, the zero-sum nature of it can be a little difficult, because if a if your left tackle makes the All-Pro, everyone necessarily gets worse along his line.
Yes, that's exactly right. So, you know, the offensive line was only so good. And Ronnie Stanley in 2019 lowered Bradley Bozeman's score, for example.
Exactly. But then on the top end of this list, your absolute best player by the AV metric here, and I don't think it's close looking at their careers, Jarre Evans, who New Orleans took in 2006 out of Bloomsburg, but longtime starter for them, multiple All Pros. I think he's the only All Pro on this grouping, six Pro Bowls. That would be an absolute home run. He's the best player here. John Runyon coming in at number two, longtime player for the Eagles, even though he was drafted by Houston. The 75th percentile, so kind of the start of what we should consider an incredibly successful pick, would be Ryan Tucker, who the St. Louis Rams drafted in 1997 out of TCU. Played in the NFL rather for about a decade, six seasons as a primary starter, played 134 games, started 102. So pretty good result, but no Pro Bowls, no All Pros.
And David Stewart there, the Tennessee tackle. Yeah. I mean, honestly, that would be a pretty fantastic result. Falele, based on where he's drafted, if he weren't the size he was, is quite likely to be a forgotten player. You know, but we'll remember him because he's going to do some things as a gadget player, probably with the Ravens, that will keep him remembered. He'll be what Odinata was to the offensive line in the 2008 to 2010 period. But boy, it's there's certainly no guarantees at this point. We do hope, you know. One of the distinctions I don't like is calling later round draft picks lottery tickets. I think they're more like poker entries. And I'm sorry if people are hearing this for about the third time, but it's always nice when I repeat points, because this is an important one for me. Is, you know, if a great poker player and a lousy poker player enter the same tournament, yeah, they each have the same chance to win in theory. They still have the same starting chips and the same rules and everything. But the great poker player has a better chance because he's a great poker player. And that's more like what the lottery ticket system is. If the Ravens have six or fourth round picks, they're going to do better on average, is my opinion, than another team with six fourth round picks. And you can show that from years of data, and yet there are still people who call them lottery tickets. And then they kind of latch onto the notion that it's just all luck. You know, you're going to draft. There's a luck component to everything. There's luck in injuries and whatnot, but please let's not call drafting luck. It invalidates everything, every dollar you ever paid to a general manager.
Yeah. And the other component of that, all gambling terms here, but people will also call the draft a crapshoot and say it doesn't matter where a guy was picked and, you know, no one knows anything. But, and I hope we can share this link out and people can follow along with it. But as you can see, in the Falele comparison, you're starting to see that bottom part of the AV creep up, where you're seeing zero AVs round by round. It's getting higher and higher. Mm-hmm. That waterline of where a guy is completely contributing zero approximate value to their team.
I mean, honestly, the 50th percentile in the fourth round is basically a replacement level player.
Exactly.
Yeah. So these guys stayed on and they played a few games. But playing 40 or 44 games at a marginal level is obviously not what the Ravens are hoping for in terms of draft picks. So they really are shooting for a well above average result. So if they were rolling dice, they might be looking for a 9 or a 10 minimum. Anything else less than that is a loss on a pick like this. And hopefully with the Ravens' judgment, they only need a 9. Another team is a 10.
Yep.
All right.
So if we go on to the next player, Jalen Armour Davis, the cornerback out of Alabama, the DB set for kind of early to mid fourth round is a fairly large one. A lot of teams taking a lot of swings on defensive backs at this point in the draft. So in the data set, we have 65 players classified as DBs. So this does include cornerbacks and safeties rather. but the 50th percentile player in this group, number 33 is Terrell Berea. I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, but was a draftee by Seattle in 2002 out of Georgia. Contributed 6 AV, had one season as a primary starter, played 29 games total, started 12 in his career. A couple other players that might be recognizable around there. Darius Johnson was a player who played like half a decade for Denver. There's a few others, but a part-time player at this point is the median expectation.
Okay. All right. So this is a, hopefully you get a guy who can jump in if necessary. And in Armour's case, I think he's drafted Armour Davis's case. He's drafted exactly with that thought in mind, is that he can be Marcus Peters' replacement in 2023. Hopefully, you know, can be good enough to play outside corner when called upon in the NFL.
Yeah. And you start to see some pretty good players as you get in the top, top 25th percentile or the top quartile of this group. So the cut line for the top quartile is Will Blackman. He's the player that comes in at the 75th percentile with 16 AV, played almost 100 games in his career, started 30 for Green Bay. Pretty good player. But then it goes from him all the way up through Asante Samuel is at the very top end of this group, who is not a Hall of Famer, but I thought he was, but I guess he's not. But the full-time New England DB.
Yeah, he'll wow, you're right. That's crazy that he's not in. I'm sure he'll go at some point. I want to point out one player who has been compared a lot to Jalen Armour Davis is Anthony Averett. Drafted a similar spot, number 119. Number 118 for Anthony Averett, and he has currently and still building on this total 10 career AV in 44 games. So you can see the Ravens really got a darn good player in Averett that they drafted and had significant playing time for them.
Yeah, and I'm actually, this is a whole nother topic, but it's not even just Averett. It's multiple of the Ravens free agents this year. I was surprised by some of the deals they got in free agency. You would think
that they were lower.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I agree. I mean, we were talking midseason and Anthony Averett was playing well. And, you know, depending on how he had finished the season, he might've been looking at $10 million a year. And that certainly didn't materialize.
Yep.
All righty. Let's keep going here.
So the next player we have is Charlie Kohler, the tight end out of Iowa State. In this group, players drafted around him, we have 19 tight ends that were taken in the 120s to 130s of the fourth round. Mm-hmm. The median expectation, the 50th percentile player, is Derek Fine, who Buffalo drafted in 2008 out of Kansas. And which player is the 50th percentile? This is where it starts to get a little questionable because you're having a lot of ones, twos, threes, and you could rank these players probably based on subjective criteria in different ways. But Derek Fine, Buffalo drafted, was a one-year starter, played 18 games total in his career, starting 11, put up two weighted AV.
Okay, so obviously you're not, you really can't hope that a 50th percentile player materializes out of your selection here. It won't do you any good.
Right.
But the 75th percentile player.
Yep. Our 75th percentile player is Terry Hardy, who Arizona drafted in 1998, two seasons as a primary starter, played in 49 games in his career, starting 37, AV of 10. So you start to get a pretty useful player there. Had a total career length of about 4 years.
That's about like Anthony Averett. If Anthony Averett had just stopped playing football this year for some reason, Terry Hardy might have been hurt. We really don't know, but interesting. That's it's not a lot. Those fourth round picks, they don't tend to work out. You're looking at the top of the group here. You have Julius Thomas up there, who was a good player for Denver for a number of years, made two Pro Bowls.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Just for comparison's sake, you would have a much higher expectation because he was drafted in the first round. But Hayden Hurst, to this point in his career, who some people have said, you know, Kolar and Likely, could they be the replacement in the Ravens offense for what Hayden Hurst provided? And his career to date already has 13 AV, which is not spectacular, not what you would want out of a first round player. But I don't think you can expect what Hurst has done to this point from this draft position.
Right. Right. Fair enough. Okay.
Or maybe put another way, just really quickly before we move on, if you were to get that, what Hurst has done in his career from this draft position, you should actually be thrilled about it, because that would be doing quite well for this fourth round value.
Yeah, and it would be the start on something bigger. You'd hope if he was re-signed by the Ravens, he'd produce. If he was not re-signed by the Ravens, you'd get a comp pick. You'd have value there. Just obviously Hayden Hurst was a first round pick, so it didn't work out for him.
Right. But, wanted to put that delicately. Like, you would expect more out of Hayden Hurst given his draft slot. If fans would like to get the production, replace the production that Hayden Hurst has put up to his career, that would be a very good outcome for this pick, that specific production level.
Good point. Your next player, I'm probably the most interested in of any, to see what the results look like.
Yeah, so Jordan Stout, I actually had to put my thumb on the scale on the methodology a little bit, just because the number of players drafted within a specific 15-pick band was pretty slim. So I actually went to all punters drafted in the fourth and fifth round of the data set, which gave us a little bit better grouping here. And the exact median player, so there were 13 punters that were drafted in the fourth or fifth round during this 20-year sample. Of those 13, the seventh, who would represent the 50th percentile pick, or 50th percentile result rather, is Josh Bidwell, who punted in the NFL for a decade. A lot of these names might be recognizable because drafted punters tend to hang around for a while. But Josh Bidwell played in almost 150 games in his career, made one Pro Bowl, but that's your 50th percentile player. Between him and the 75th percentile is a recognizable name, Dave Zastadil, former Raven, played in the league for 12 years. And then our 75th percentile would be Mike Seifers, who the Chargers drafted, who I was surprised to see never made an All-Pro or a Pro Bowl, but was a longtime player, had about 13 years in the league, playing 195 games. And so if we could get that out of Stout, I think that would be something we could be happy about as a replacement for Cook.
Absolutely. And even Sam Cook, as good as he's been playing in the league for 16 years, has only 25 career AV. So there's not a lot there to be shooting for at the upper end. So the Ravens, actually, it's an unusual pick because they can hope to get value on this player beyond the initial contract without overpaying for it too much. Like in another position, you're paying market value means a large portion of the cap has to be set aside. At punter, even Sam Cook only is scheduled to make about $3 million this year. So if you get the combination of punter and holder you want, you still get value out of this fourth round pick.
And that's something we've seen with Justin Tucker as well, even though he was not drafted. But his contract, you can pay him 50% over the next highest paid kicker and feel like you're getting a good deal of what he means for the team. And he's obviously a unicorn. You can't expect to get the Justin Tucker of punters here. But
the question is often asked, would you trade Justin Tucker for a first round draft pick? And it actually is a very difficult question. It's not an obvious yes by any means.
Well, yeah, if you try to answer it, it's interesting because probably if you say there's 32 kickers just in the NFL, I'm sure number 32 through two, you pretty much say no. And then you get to Justin Tucker and you almost want to say yes, or I'm sorry, you would absolutely trade them for anything almost. Mm-hmm. And then you get to Justin Tucker and it almost flips completely and you wonder, would you trade him for anything? Anything reasonable.
Anyway. All right. So I would like to put this link up on the site, and we have to cut it off here. Do you want to talk about Tyler Beatty for a second? We're going to skip Likely and Damarian Williams, and we can put the link on the site if people want to go look at, you know, where the 75th percentile, the 50th percentile is. That'll be great. But talk about Tyler Beatty for a second and what you can really expect to get out of pick 196.
Yeah. So this is, I think we talked about it earlier, where you really start to see lots of zeros at the bottom end of the range. The 50th percentile players, because there's 24, so the 50th percentile is somewhere between 12 and 13, but are the last two players with any positive AV contribution in the grouping. So Aaron Brown and James Davis. And James Davis is a fairly recognizable name. Went to Clemson, was drafted by Cleveland, played for about, I think he had a two-year career, but really only played 1 year, I believe because of injury. But they're the very back end of players who contributed any positive value in this group. So you get a lot of special teamers, a lot of guys who played part-time duty. But if Tyler Beatty can play games basically for the Ravens, it'll be a positive contributor.
Yeah. Let's put it in a different set. What would be your to get value out of this pick? How many touches does he need to get as a Baltimore Raven in his first 4 years? I've got a number in mind. I'm writing mine down. Not that it's a big secret or anything, but what would you say?
So to get value out of the pick, probably 200 or about 50.
I was going to say 250.
Okay.
So I think that would actually be really good. If you got 250 touches, maybe about 1,000 total yards, or let's call it 1250, 1400, including receiving yards, maybe, because a lot of his touches will come as a receiver. I think that would actually be a win for this pick, and he could fill a valuable role. Ravens, you know, if you look at their past, they've always very quickly found replacement running backs whenever they needed one. And it's actually a little strange that they've gotten attached to a bigger contract with Gus Edwards, when they had not typically signed these kind of deals in the past, or not for a while anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that result you just described would be great for Tyler Beatty. As a quick aside, it's funny, some of the top players here, speaking of players that can do a lot with lesser running backs, are Terrell Davis, who is a Hall of Famer, and Mike Anderson. Both went to Denver, both in this same range, but mm-hmm. not a reasonable expectation for a sixth round pick. But getting to your point of teams that do more with less in terms of investment at the running back position, those Shanahan teams in Denver were able to make do with this exact draft position.
It's all about scheme. If you've got a run scheme where you know how to fit in backs based on their talents, I think you really have something. And you know most places, I think that's a complete load of crap. Like on the offensive line, I don't think you have to be a particularly gap or zone blocker, because I think that good scheme can make you good in either system. Like Roman's scheme, I don't think the fact that he's thought of as mainly a zone guy is going to hurt Linderbaum. I think his arm length generally could hurt him as a pass blocker, but I don't think it's going to be the run scheme that's actually going to hurt him.
Yep. And the last thing I'll say about Tyler Beatty is I think he's a good example of why this is a valuable exercise, or at least I think this is a valuable exercise to think through kind of what is the reasonable expectation for a given pick. Because if he were to get those 200 or 250 touches for however many yards we just said that he could go for, and we get to, you know, the third or fourth year of this contract, and he either gets released in the fourth year because of declining option value, or they let him walk as a free agent, there's a lot of fans that might look back and say, not a great pick. What did he really do here? Not exciting. But when you look at this grouping, if he were to get that number of touches, we probably have him well into the 75th percentile, if not higher, of this group. And that would be a great pick.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that, you know, is very clearly underscored by your data. So we're going to put this up. We'll put the link up. Look on the website for it, filmstudybaltimore.com, along with this podcast. It'll be right below that. You can go in and you can see the data. And it's fascinating to look at this and look at some of the names that didn't work out and the ones that did both. Great job, Spencer. Really appreciate you putting this together. These kind of things take time. How many hours did you spend putting this together?
Well, luckily, Football Reference makes it a little easier nowadays to export the data from their database, but it took maybe an hour or two to put it all together.
Okay. Well, fantastic work and great kind of a framing up of what the Ravens can hope to get from their draft picks. And we'll see if the Ravens, you know, clear the hurdles in each of these cases at the 50th percentile at a minimum. But Spencer, tell folks again where they can talk football with you.
You can find me on Twitter at SpencerCP. So SpencerCP on Twitter.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, if you want to be on a film study short, this is that time of year. Hit me up with your ideas on Twitter. DMs are always open. Looking for a 20 to 30 minute topic. These topics always end up being so good, we end up spending almost an hour on them. But thanks for doing that, Spencer. And really appreciate having you on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.